All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NFL podcast for Thursday, November 2nd. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we're on take two of starting the podcast from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, dfsr.com. If you like typing in less keystrokes on your computer, go over to dfsr.com. I know, everyone's always trying to take the easy way out. You know what, I always type in the full thing. I just type in the full URL because I don't like to take
Because you're not a millennial, dude. You know, you're not used to cutting corners. You like it the hard way.
Exactly.
So to speak.
Nah, actually, the browser just fills it in for me. So it's even less. I only need to type in D. All right, dfsr.com/NBA will get you a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That's optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. NFL, it includes NBA as well. We have base hockey projections up there. Everything we offer is covered under one subscription package. So go, please check that out. I think you'll be happy with the service. Go over to the chat room. Ask people how they like the user interaction and how we kind of work with customers. And everyone seems very happy, and they'll give you their honest opinion. You think you'll sign up and be with us for the long haul. Week 9 in the NFL coming up here. We have a Thursday game tonight. We're going to mostly just talk about cash game plays for the main slate here. So I don't know if the Buffalo Jets game would have warranted any discussion either or anyway, so I don't think we really need to worry about that. And we will be back again tomorrow doing a full game-by-game breakdown of all the games going on here in Week 9 that you can go check out as well. Today we're just going to go through some positions and just talk about where we think we're going to start landing on cash game plays coming in for Week 9 in the NFL for FanDuel and DraftKings. So we talked about this a little bit on the week 8 recap. 9 minus 1 is 8. And
that's true.
Yep, I actually just typed that into a spreadsheet, and that was confirmed. So 9 minus 1 is 8. And we talked about this in the breakdown from last week, and how the Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson show was just on. It was a complete spectacle last week, and by far they was far and away the two best quarterbacks. They were actually just two of the best quarterback performances of the whole season, or ranked up right up there to the top. I wrote both these guys up for cash games. Sometimes people ask, it's funny. Oh, it's easy to write up. Well, one, it's easy to write the most expensive guys. It's also easy to write up the most expensive guys like the week after they were great. So I always feel a little weird when I write a guy like Watson or a guy like Wilson up. Do you think that, there's times where, our system kind of like hedges too much on the short-term result? Or do you think this is just one of those sort of happy accidents where they were just great last week and we just would have played them again this week anyway?
Yeah, the fact of the matter is that our system barely notices the short-term result in most cases. It's not really designed to, overweight last week's thing or anything like that. I mean, the only really thing we're looking at on a week-to-week basis is opportunity, figuring that the actual performance on a per-snap or per-carry or per-target basis is going to pretty much normalize over the course of the last couple of seasons. Now, with Watson, we're dealing with such a short sample size that, we don't really have a whole lot else to go on, so one outsized performance actually can influence it, particularly with things like rushing yards, because, last week was his tied for his greatest number of carries on the season with that seeming like a pretty fundamental portion of his game now. Call it maybe 6 carries per game, something like that. So, and he's also very effective when he does take off. So you combine those factors with, an excellent yards per attempt average so far that we have no reason to believe is anything other than what it is, right? I mean, there's certainly some, I think there's some smoke in this fire here, but I think generally speaking, he's just seems like a great fantasy quarterback.
Yeah, they are crazy favorites here against the Colts. I believe their total is trending up over the low 30s right now. Yeah, it's a little north of 31, which is, that's really about as high as you'll see in the NFL, just from an implied total going into
it. Really,
this is like kind of harkens to when the Patriots face bad defenses. Not even this year's Patriots, but peak Tom Brady kind of style would be, and they were playing a bad defense. This is kind of the total you would get. And it makes sense. Houston offense has been excellent. They can run the ball a little bit with Miller, not all that effectively. And so they're forced to, rely on Watson and just kind of do what he does. We talked about this the other day too. He's been a little touch. I would say his touchdown, he's been run hot in the touchdown department. I don't think you can pencil him in for this kind of per game or per touchdown per attempt number going forward for the rest of his career. He just had a million touchdowns basically. So I think that's going to probably normalize.
Yeah, I actually think that's dramatically unsustainable, and it's the thing that gives me the most pause. I mean, the fact that Vegas is a buyer gives me some solace for sure, but the fact is, like, look at that KC game. If like we're kind of counting that as part of his overall resume, but 16 for 31 is not a game you're ever going to be happy with, generally speaking. But the fact that he put together somehow 261 yards on 16 completions and the five touchdowns turned it into an insane game. Even the Cleveland game, 17 for 29, is really no great, great shakes. But yeah, just the red zone usage on him is so high, and the offense is clicking at such a rate that, yeah, Vegas is a believer. I think the rest of the DFS industry is going to be believers, and I'm a believer too, at least for this week. But I am a little less optimistic about Watson than I think some people you might see on ESPN or wherever else.
If this was even a neutral matchup, I think that it would be a much closer Agreed. Decision. Like the fact that they're minus 13 favorites here against an Indy defense that ranks 30th in DVOA against the pass this season. It is just basically a dream matchup. This is exactly what you want. So I think if he was facing, I don't know, an Eagles team that's like in sort of middle of the road in defense. I'm trying to like pick out some middle of the road teams, Arizona, like teams like this that, you know, maybe play a little bit slower and the defense is just, you know, a degree or two better. I don't think we would be talking about him in much earnest. I think we'd still be talking about him because like the fantasy production has just been kind of almost, it has been really opponent independent, right? Like he torched Seattle last week. Seattle is not the Seattle of old, but that was a team that even with last week's performance still ranks sixth in DVOA against the pass, right? So like when you even wait for a game where they got completely smoked, they're still a top 10 DVOA pass team. So I think that the fact that he has been able to do it against really any team, I think you do see him coming in as chalk. I also think that there's just not as much to spend up on. Like, we're going to get down to some of these receivers here in a second, but the fact that I don't think you're needing to really spend that receiver at all this week makes it so that just fitting his price tag too is going to be, I think, the way that most people go. The next guy I had on the list is Wilson too. I mean, I mentioned here that he was awesome too. Is this a case? I mean, does the same kind of thought logic for you apply here to Wilson? I mean, do you even like Wilson because he's 1,100 cheaper? Do you just like Wilson better in a vacuum?
I might like Wilson better, honestly. I just think we have a longer track record. I think he's got a higher completion rate. He's less touchdown dependent. He's still the team's number one plan when they get into the red zone. The carries are going to be a little bit less at this point in his career. I think the rushing upside is a little bit lower, but I think just as a complete package going forward, like and obviously there's matchup considerations here with Indy and so on, but going forward for the rest of the season, I would guess, like, I would take the Wilson side of who will score more fantasy points going forward, just because we've seen a lot of people come and go. We haven't seen a lot of people average four touchdowns a game the way Watson has in the last 4 weeks. Actually, more than that if you count for his rushing touchdowns. You just don't really see that. And also, I think it's going to be difficult for him to sustain even the touchdown to interception ratio given the completion percentage. So I don't think he's going to go back to being what he was in his first two games by any stretch since he in Jacksonville. But I think going forward, I like Wilson's prospects better. It's not to say I'm going to play him for cash games this week. I think it's worthwhile to look at, you know, the sharps in Vegas and what they're kind of keying in on here. But just generally speaking, like, for instance, if I could just bet the under on the Houston Indy game, I would probably do that. I think that right now he's such a public figure. There's so much buzz around his performances recently. It's really hard to imagine him just, you know, being the next, I don't know, Peyton Manning in his prime. You know, like, that's not, those types of folks don't come around too often. So, I like Wilson better going forward. This week, it's kind of a toss up for me. I think I'd be happy just to land wherever the system felt most comfortable.
Yeah, no, when you X out Watson from lineups, at least on FanDuel right now, you get mostly a smattering of other quarterbacks in the tier below, like where it's all fairly close. Like, it's Wilson, Breeze, Prescott, and Alex Smith are all kind of grouped together. They're all right around the same price. All their matchups are like decent without being amazing. So I think that after Watson, and if my guess is correct, that he is the highest owned quarterback, and I believe he will be. I think you'll see ownership spread out between that group below, and we can talk about some of those guys on the podcast tomorrow. I mean, honestly, I usually write up three quarterbacks. I only wrote up two this week because I just didn't think that there was really many decisions to make beyond those two guys. And all those other guys, just, you know, like that group that I just said, all came in so close together that it was really taking a stand on any one of them was not really the way I wanted to go. I think these two guys sit pretty significantly against above the rest of the group. I do think you're going to see some interesting decisions here at running back this week. So we're going to go a little bit more in this than game by game. I wrote this up after the JGI news that he had been traded. So I had factored in that he was going to Philly. I think it helps our decision-making process here for him that he's playing against Denver. So I think you can just kind of avoid it on its face because their defense is so good that I think this is a perfect situation where you just, I'm very thankful they're not playing like the Niners this week, right? Like, that their schedule didn't flip by one more week, because this would have been a weird decision to try to guess what the Eagles' plan was with their new guy. So leaving him off the list, I think, was pretty easy. I wrote up Fournette first. Fournette is facing a very good defense in Cincinnati this week. I kind of did my – tell me if you think this is correct. For FanDuel and DraftKings, I thought there was a group of guys – one more thing. It looks like Ezekiel Elliott's going to be suspended. We don't know – we're recording this on Thursday morning. He's still not suspended. This is the great NFL mystery of the year of whether he's going to be suspended. This, it seems, has gone into every courtroom in America to try to figure out if he should be suspended or not. It's like the Second Circuit.
Well, I wonder if it's going to wind up screwing them. Like, if the suspension finally hits, let's say, leading into the playoffs or something like that. Like, that would really be a – you know, robbing Peter to pay all sort of situation where you just like appeal, and then finally lose like in week 16 or something. Like, that would be a complete disaster, but I guess we'll see.
I think there's probably some value to be had on whoever his backup is. That hasn't really even been, like, no one else has really taken snaps. Like, Alfred Morris has taken a few snaps. Darren McFadden hasn't even seen the field. Rod Smith, that they have on the roster. That is not a situation I feel totally comfortable with. We'll talk about that more in the game by game. Anyway, so the reason I mention him is because there's a group of running backs near the top that are all, it's the Gurley, Hunt, and Fournette group that are all pretty elite when it comes to touches. And I think that there's a scenario here, and the guys I chose, for the two sites, I basically just chose who is the cheapest of the three on each site. And here I chose Fournette. Does the matchup against Cincinnati worry you at all that they are a very good defense, but he's coming 400 to 500 less than that other group, and I think you can spend that running back here?
Yeah, I think it's totally worthwhile. I mean, when you really look at the track record in terms of just overall opportunity, Fournette really is one of that top group. His floor on the season was 13 fantasy points against Tennessee. Cincinnati has been good. I mean, they were effective against Le'Veon Bell. I think, you know, I just think Fournette is such a prominent part of that Jacksonville offense that it seems like even if they get behind, the plan is to give him the ball. And I think that for me is enough to think it's probably worth taking the risk on. You know, and I think that savings, to your point, also just makes such a big difference that, you know, when you compare him to other guys who have, you know, fine, but maybe not lights out sort of matchups, some of the savings you can get at other positions, I think you can make a strong case for rolling Fournette out there and maybe going down to like Mark Ingram, say, at the running back two slot, and then kind of middling out wide receiver as opposed to paying up the max, you know, going up to Gurley or one of these other guys, which, you know, I don't think is bad necessarily, but I definitely think Fournette's in that conversation.
Yeah, no. So in terms of just like sort of relative usage, that's, I call that rushing attempts plus receiving targets this season, he is fifth, but it's really close. I mean, it's Bell kind of by a mile, and then Elliott, McCoy, Gurley, and Fournette sit in a group that right below them. And I think that, you know, he's a home favorite here. He's coming off the bye week. The injury concerns. I think he was really close to playing before the bye, and then they kind of just saved him, which was probably smart. And so he's now had two straight weeks off, and I think that. That kind of thing matters, right? That kind of rest and that kind of just like be able to just kind of come in fresh here, especially as a home favorite, I think is really going to matter for him. And I think that we've seen enough of him that when he's on the field, they're playing. They can't rely on Blake Bortles. Blake Bortles is bad. They need to run the ball here. So as a home favorite, I think in Cincinnati, I think I'm willing to overlook, not overlook, I mean, we're factoring it into our projections, but willing to deal with the idea that he's facing a very good defense in Cincinnati. Todd Gurley, it was the guy that I kind of went on DraftKings because he's the same kind of thinking here. He's the cheapest of that group when you head over to that site. He's only 8,100 on DraftKings. He's below the McCoy, Hunt, Fournette group, where those other guys are 300 to 600, depending on the guy. He faces the Giants team. Gurley, in terms of his usage, you know, that same number, he sits fourth. He's tied exactly with McCoy. So he's basically third in the NFL in looks. He's also coming off the bye. Do you think, do you like him as a DraftKings play?
Yeah, I do. I think Gurley, I don't think there's really anything to be concerned about with Gurley. You know, he has had, I guess, a little bit of up and down action. The Giants haven't been the defense that they were promised going into this season. I think Gurley is going to be a lot closer to the guy he was. Let's see, fantasy wise, it's stupid. I was going to say he's going to be more closer to the guy who was in Arizona than Jacksonville, but he actually had the exact same game, which is like 20 yards or 20 carries with 5 yards per carry, which is just excellent. You know, that's like you'll sign up for that every time, pretty much. Really, his only bad game this season was against Seattle, a week that we played him. Thank you very much. I think he's just a really, really good play. Definitely expensive, but I think you're getting what you pay for in this case, and I feel good about that. Actually, I wanted to ask you about one guy in this top category since we've now talked about two of the three most expensive guys. What's your take on Kareem Hunt? I think I'm totally off on this price point. What about you?
Yeah, I think I am too. I think that we have, he's had a clustering effect around some of his fantasy scoring in the sense that, like, it was so good early on and it's sort of, it has trickled into his overall projection, but it's still sort of informing some of the projection that he, look, he was able to do it. So the fact that it should count for something, but the production has, yeah, the part where he was going to score, I mean, his first three games were fantasy point wise, 50 points, 26 points, 28 points, right? And so he hasn't even, he hasn't sniffed 20 points basically since then. I hit a 19 point game. So, and that was actually the next week. And
you're talking DraftKings scoring. Right. If he, and that's only if you're going to get a point per reception. On FanDuel, his best week since then was 14 points, and that was the Washington game. Since then, you've also seen the yards per carry fall off a cliff, which is sort of like to be expected because he was getting 10 yards per carry, which is pretty hard to do. And I think now that opposing offenses or defenses rather kind of know what they're bringing to the table with Hunt, I think he's just totally overpriced right now. I think he's more like an $8,500 to $8,200 running back, and I would not play the guy.
Yeah, the line in this game is high, so there's expected to be some scoring against Dallas. But if you look at that list of just the opportunity, he's 1, 2, 3, 4. He's like 10th on the list in terms of just touches per game, and that's just. It's way too low to pay. That is a way too low of a number to pay as the most expensive running back in the league. And it's specifically why I left him off, because I just would rather people make that mistake and just grab the guys whose teams have been content with just giving them the ball over and over and over again in every situation this year. And that has been that's been the guys that I mentioned above. The next group of guys I wrote up. You know, it's weird. Mark Ingram is far and away, not far and away. He's a fantastic value in our system if you apply what I really truly believe to be his opportunity going forward, and that like the opportunity they showed since they got rid of Adrian Peterson, and then he fumbled twice last game and sort of got mini benched and split snaps with Kamara. I've been waiting for news. I've been waiting to hear someone in New Orleans say something about anything. Although Sean Payton is like one of the least trusting guys you can ever hear, like speak about something and then trust what he's going to do. I think the situation here is great for them, and I'm just very. I wrote them both up sort of together because I think they're actually both good plays, and I'm also just worried that they split snaps last week.
Yeah, I guess I'm waiting for the news. Also, I don't anticipate that they'll go into a straight timeshare, given how they've deployed Ingram in the past. I think sometimes coaches just get frustrated and then bench a guy, and then they get sick of hearing questions about it, and then almost spite play the guy even more the next game. Like that's just my own armchair psychologist, sports psychologist coming out. But I do think Ingram will continue to get the kind of usage he was seeing beforehand. And listen, his usage in this game wasn't bad either. He still had 24 touches in the game, so it's not like he disappeared completely. I don't think they see Kamara as an every down back. I don't think they'll come out and say that Kamara is going to start. I think they'll probably pay some lip service to it being something of a timeshare, but it was already something of a timeshare. Like Kamara had fewer touches against Chicago than he did against Green Bay, so I'm not overly concerned about it whatsoever. I wouldn't consider playing Kamara personally, and I think Ingram, you know, maintains his status as an excellent play. I think the fumble thing, yeah, I think sometimes coaches just, they get small sample size oriented, or, you know, they just get too frustrated to continue to watch a guy fumble. So, and by the way, sometimes you fumble and the ball goes out of bounds. Like it just so happens that he fumbled twice and they lost both. And that, you know, penalizes us for DFS, but also penalizes their team when in reality it should be closer to 50-50 in terms of who picks up the fumbles. I think if they pick up one of those, then all of a sudden Ingram has another great week. So yeah, I like Ingram going forward. I'm not concerned. I'm not even really sitting around waiting for news. If some sort of news does come out, then obviously we'll adapt to that. As of now, if we hear nothing, I'm going to assume that Ingram's role will maintain the same status that it has been.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that he ranks right up there with the very elite group of guys with touches when he's getting them. And you know, you said he had 24 touches. That was on 31 total snaps, right? That kind of usage in terms of the time that he's on the field is basically unheard of. It's likely an outlier, all things considered, but it's still, they're heavy favorites at home against the Tampa Bay defense. It's not all that good against the run. I think I'm going to be okay trusting the Ingram thing here. I think other people are going to be worried about it, and I think we can get separation even in cash on that kind of idea. For where I stand, that looks like a pretty good spot. Let's go on to wide receivers. DeAndre Hopkins, I put him in here as a cash game play because I do think he's the safest wide receiver of the group of guys going here on the main slate. He's also very expensive, and I suspect that when it's all said and done, he's like the sort of the price odd man out in our lineups, right? Like, so I think it'd be crazy not to put him here in the article just because he's far and away the highest projected receiver for our group. So he's 22.5 points on DraftKings. The next closest guy is 19.6. And I still think that it doesn't totally get there because of the salary. Do you think I'm summing that up correctly in needing to put him on here and maybe just thinking that he doesn't ultimately end up in our lineup.
Yeah, I think that's probably accurate. I think I could go... See, I think Hopkins, his kind of role right now reminds me a lot of Deshaun Watson, where a lot of why he's so expensive is wrapped up in the tremendous touchdown scoring success that they've had over the last few weeks. If you look at his actual targets and, you know, if you just gave me receptions and targets, which I think oftentimes is a pretty fair barometer for what to expect or what kind of price we would want to put on a guy. So let's go back. I mean, we can do the whole season, but we'll just even do the last four games because overall they've been excellent and kind of have fostered this increase in price. So 10 receptions on 12 targets, terrific. Four receptions on 12 targets, I would have assumed that was a pretty bad game. Just so happened that three of those four receptions were touchdowns. So it was one of his best games of the season. Two receptions on four targets against Cleveland, terrible. Just so happened one of his two receptions was a touchdown. And then 8 for 11 against Seattle, great. Is that the resume of a $9,100 wide receiver? Generally speaking, it's not. You know, when we see guys like Antonio Brown or you know, even Julio Jones, when he was getting a ton of targets, even DeAndre Hopkins in the past, we tend to see a more consistent, higher number of targets, and we also see a better conversion rate on those targets. This, to me, looks more like a profile of like T.Y. Hilton or Mike Evans on a hot streak or something like that. And I think at 9,100, it's definitely worth considering. I mean, if he's going to be their primary red zone option and they're going to be in the red zone constantly, then I think Hopkins is a good play. But I think this is a time to sell high on Hopkins for, you know, heaven forbid you play a season-long fantasy football league. I think you trade him for some other sort of elite option. I think if you're playing DFS, understand that you're buying at the absolute peak and that the best fantasy scoring days are likely behind him here. And which is fine. He still might be worth this price. I'm not totally sure about that. I wouldn't totally bet against him, but I'm tending to err on the side of caution here, and I'd rather take a better track record at a lower price.
The next three guys I wrote up are guys that are falling in the middle tier to lower group that I think are going to see outsized opportunity based on what they've seen up until the point. So I'm going to group them together, and you can just kind of choose who you want to comment on here. So the guys I wrote up, and I'll give the very brief reasoning behind. So the first one is Dez. I think that you see, I wrote him up with the assumption that Elliott's out, that I think that you see him work even more into the game in a what's supposed to be kind of is projected to be a shootout style game with decent scoring, and they're going to be without the guy that they've very heavily relied on to churn out most of their offense. So that's the Dez. That's a quick Dez idea. And then the other two guys were Funchess and Shepard. Funchess, I boosted his targets not significantly, but enough in Kelvin Benjamin leaving because he had been trending that way with targets, and Benjamin being out of the fold here. I think that you do see an uptick for him. And then Sterling Shepard coming back from injury on a team that has been completely decimated at wide receiver, and he's finally going to be back against the Rams. You can kind of choose which one of those guys you think. I mean, is there any you disagree with in that group?
I can't say there's any I disagree with necessarily. There are some that I have some concerns about, and I guess, you know, let's weigh the pros and cons as we wade through it. So I'd say Dez to start. I think if Dez is healthy, then he's a clear lock for cash games for me this week. I mean, we saw even with Elliott in the mix, he was touching, you know, 10 targets a game, 13 targets, 8 targets. That went down a little bit against Washington there, but not far enough for me to be too concerned. And also, if Elliott misses, that takes a lot of the red zone targets away as well, so, or just opportunity, you know. Elliott would get them more in the carries department, but Dez does make a nice big target. He has been featured in the red zone a lot this season so far, and I think he would return to that role even more prominently going forward. I am a little bit concerned. He's listed on the injury report this week, limited in practice on Wednesday with a knee injury. Now, he's also been struggling with that knee injury for a while, so that just could be kind of a maintenance day. I think the plan as of now, as I'm reading, is to kind of wind him back up and get him back to full speed by Friday. If that's the case, then I think Dez is a fantastic play. Funchess, I think, is an interesting one. So on its surface, it feels like a really good value play. Like Benjamin goes away and someone's got to slot in. I just don't know that I totally trust Cam. Do you? Like,
No, that's my biggest problem. Yeah. I don't totally trust Cam. I think 10 targets for Funchess is a reasonable ceiling. I wouldn't put that as mean.
Was it really target. Of no one else, right? It's like Funchess and Ed Dixon or something.
And they throw it at McCaffrey a ton. Like McCaffrey, actually leads the team in targets. But they've actually been playing him less snaps, so I'm just not sure. So, I mean, there was a reason for sure that they got rid of Kelvin, right? Like he was a pretty highly targeted guy, and they had no problem trading him, right? So like there was some kind of fundamental reasoning behind just being fine going trading one of your top receivers that really never happened. happens in the NFL.
And they're not like out of it either, right? Like they're 5-3 at this team. I just don't understand that trade whatsoever.
I think they just, I mean, I read something that he was clogging up the box too much because they lined them up on the inside and they were having trouble running the ball. I mean, who knows the actual reasons, right? But like, it's very, very rare to see, it's rare to see anyone get traded in the NFL, like any high profile guy. It's also very rare just to see a high profile wide receiver. And I'm going to count Benjamin as a high profile wide receiver. He's not all that.
He's an Navy, though.
Yeah, exactly. For him to get traded, I think there's just a reason. I think that the fact that Funchess has multiple weeks of just being targeted makes me feel like they're comfortable with that situation. I took him up. I'm just gonna look real quick what I took him up to. I think I took him up to 8 targets. I took him up to 9 targets. That might be a little high. So he needs all those targets because you're right. Cam is not a good quarterback. Like he needs when you have Cam as your quarterback, you need a lot of targets because he's just not an accurate passer, right? Like you're gonna have low conversion rates. Just if you're an excellent receiver, you're gonna have low conversion rates because he just is not an accurate. So I think Funchess needs all 9 of those. I'm mostly buying on this price. I think that when you can get a guy who's saying to see outsized opportunity in the $6,100 range on FanDuel, you just have to kind of go, you have to try it, right? Like, because you just don't see receivers. And this is the same thing with Shepard, $5,900. If these guys were $7,000, I wouldn't be going there on FanDuel. But the fact that they are trending toward the lower middle tier of salary with 9 target-ish, you know, reasonable projections, I think that is where I'm just willing to say, I think it's just completely fine. And I'm willing to live with some of the, maybe the warts and maybe some of the unknowns.
Yeah. Let's finish off on Funchess and we'll talk about Shepard next. So the only thing I want to caution people against with Funchess, because again, on the surface, this feels like a kind of a no brainer situation. Be like if the Falcons traded Julio Jones, you know, that's kind of how it feels. Keep in mind, Funchess has more targets than Benjamin this season already. Like he had 58 targets through 8 games. Benjamin had 51 targets through 8 games. So we're only talking about redistributing less than 6.5 targets a game with Benjamin leaving. Like I think just the fact that he's a big name and has been a super highly targeted receiver in the past means that, you know, a lot of people are going to view this as a wide receiver one leaving a team. But in 2014, 145 targets. Last year, 118 targets. This year, fewer than 6 targets a game. I'm just not sure Benjamin leaves that big a hole to fill on some level. So, I mean, if you're making a case for Funchess, I think a reasonable one is, well, he's already averaging around 7 targets a game. If Benjamin leaves 6.5 to spread around, can Funchess get 1.5 of those? Sure. So if we're talking 8.5 targets, but I think 10 targets is out of bounds. I don't see him getting half of the targets that Benjamin left on the table. Because again, I think on most teams, if a receiver who is getting 6.5 targets a game just up and left, like we wouldn't even notice, right? I mean, I, not that we wouldn't notice, but it would be like the other way if Sterling Shepard weren't going to play, but Odell Beckham was around, you know, like you wouldn't be like, wow, think about all the targets this spreads around, you know, like I just think, I don't know. I think the Carolina passing attack is bad enough that it means a lot less than it would mean on other teams, I guess is all I want to say. So yeah, 6,100 is still cheap for sure. But I just don't want to get carried away as though Antonio Brown's leaving the Steelers or something on that order.
Sure, that's fair. Do you feel the same way about Shepard? I mean, do you have the same, is it the same thought process applied to him, or is it, do you think, see that as a different situation?
I think I like Shepard a little bit more just because we've seen greater consistency in terms of converting the actual targets he has gotten into receptions. 5-for-5 against Tampa Bay, 7-for-10 against Philly, 8-of-7 against Dallas to start the season. I think that Shepard, you know, has just had a better track record. He's probably just a better receiver in general. So I think that's probably what I like about him. I think he's got a better actual passing quarterback. I think that the Giants are going to rely a little bit more on the pass. Like they don't have the quarterback running option. They don't have, you know, a guy like McCaffrey catching balls out of the backfield necessarily. They don't have, you know, any sort of flashy running back. Not that Carolina really does either, but Carolina certainly has shown a propensity to lean on Stewart and McCaffrey to a lesser degree in the past. I think it is actually a similar situation, but I also think that the hole left by the actual good players on the Giants is much larger than the hole being left by Benjamin.
Yep, I totally agree with that, and I just think it's going to be a week where you end up paying down a little receiver, and I think that's going to make some slightly uncomfortable decisions here around this lower tier. Hit us up with a sponsor before we hit up the tight ends and defenses.
Let's talk about fantasyfactor.com. That's fantasyfactor.com. Fantasy Factor is a great place to go and play if you're just getting into DFS, or if you want to play against maybe slightly less sharkish competition. It's a great place to go to play, say, $5 to $100 per week. They also offer free rolls, $500 free rolls, basically every single week of the football season, and oftentimes those aren't even filled up. So you can go in there and really get some good value, start building a bankroll, head on over to fantasyfactor.com and check them out.
I will say one other thing about wide receivers before we finish off here, but the FanDuel is completely daring you to play Larry Fitzgerald this week at 5,900, or excuse me, at 7,000, and same with DraftKings at 5,900, because I know he's getting Drew Stanton as his quarterback, and I'm not going to do it, but they've really lowered the price on a guy who probably is still going to, I didn't write him up, but he's facing the very worst defense, and he is a targeted guy, and he just happens to have Drew Stanton as his quarterback. So it's one of those things, like, how much do you want to hope that the 2 weeks worth of Drew Stanton is enough to overcome the fact that he's Drew Stanton? And but the fact that they're playing the Niners and this price has dropped is going to be, I think you will see people.
Did it worse last week against the Rams, my friend. five completions.
He's horrible. I think there's a mistake in our system right now, because it's drawing too much on recent performance for some of these guys that are new, and he has like a negative. He has a negative.
Like the interception and the
fumble. Which is like only these complete edge cases kind of things. It's just like the system's just going to get screwed up because it can't deal with, like, it doesn't like know to ask me the question and say, hey, do you think that we should not be drawing completely on just like his, you know, five sample size?
Well, he would only have to score 2.1 points less than he did last week to go into the negatives. So
I've just been so I don't know, unexcited to go fix it, that I just kind of been staring at a negative projection for him. I'm gonna fix it this morning though. Okay, tight ends. Nice. We have some interesting, there's some interesting tight ends this week. So there's some cheap guys that I think they're gonna have some opportunity. I also think guys like Kelsey, and not Ertz as much, like Kelsey is in a good spot and he's expensive, and I think you could see people play him. I just didn't write him up because I don't know if you're going to want to spend in the very upper tier, but he's got a very high projection here, over 19. I did write up Evan Engram though, and sort of the same thought process as Shepard, except that we've seen it from Engram. Ingram's been really highly targeted guy in the Giants passing attack since they've been decimated with injury. I actually don't mind a scenario of maybe stacking Ingram and Shepard together in cash games, and it's a game that it's really likely the Giants are gonna be playing from behind, and they have no run game to speak of. They've been throwing a ton already this season, and these two guys I do think eat up a lot of their target share. Do you agree with that idea on the Ingram and Shepard thing?
Well, I want to say this in the most manly way possible, Doug. I heart Evan Engram this week. You heard it here first, folks. I heart this guy, okay? Full on heart, like multiple hearts.
You have a heart on for him, you would say?
It's like it's like the yellow face with the hearts coming out of the eyes. That's kind of how I feel about Evan Engram. Sorry, man. It felt even worse than I thought it would.
Not sounding great, but why don't you just keep going, Pop?
But Engram is actually like, I like, if I could go on to No Halftime, another one of our sponsors, and just pick two players straight up, I would take Ingram heads up over both Shepard and Funchess, maybe combined. I love Ingram so much. Like, he's the exact tight end I want to play. He did it against Denver. He did it against Seattle. The opportunity continues to grow. He's such a big part of the offense, again, except for the week that we played him against the Chargers when he went out there and had zero fantasy points. The straight zero, you know, no one reception for 9 yards, none of that stuff. It's the old, is he even on the field performance? But that performance is fine.
You start getting the text like, is Evan Engram hurt? Like, what's, like, is he playing? Like, who's watching the game right now? And I don't know if that game
Exactly. Like, if you're not in a bar or you just can't get the Giants game for whatever reason, like, you start texting your friends who are watching the game and you're like, hey, dude, just curious. Is Engram playing or is it, oh, he is playing? Okay. Cause it's almost halftime. He has no targets. Is that right? He's mostly blocking. Okay. Cool. Thanks for letting me know. but no, I love Engram this week. Also, just their top red zone target by a mile right now. I think that's a great play. I think if you need to find a reason to get away from him, I think Dixon is the extreme poor man's version of him. I think Dixon's cheaper for sure, but the track record is so much less. I mean, I guess I don't mind freeing up some extra cash to spend up at a more premium position, but I think, you know, as we've looked more and more at these other options, Funchess, Shepard, and those guys, probably I feel safer about those guys, like paying down for those guys effectively instead of going into the 7,000s at wide receiver than I would going from Ingram to Dixon. I think with Dixon, you're just doing a little bit too much hoping and wishing rather than just going on. Like, Ingram is the perfect mix because we would already be considering playing him even if there weren't more opportunity opening up this week, you know?
And I think that I do think the tight end decisions are pretty close. I like Ingram more than the rest of the group in terms of points per dollar, but I think you can make strong cases for, like, really a lot of these guys, like Delanie Walker's, if he's healthy, I think he's a great price here. I struggled to write up these guys, or I struggled to pick the guys, because I just thought there were just a lot of guys. Brate, Kittle, Ertz, they're all really, Jack Doyle, the list is pretty long here, I think, for tight ends in good spots, at good price points, but I'm fine landing on Ingram, because, yeah, he's like, he's going to start butting up against, like, an elite tight end just guy, like, into that. If he continues this kind of production, he's going to soon enter, like, the Ertz-Kelsey group of guys that just sees just a crazy amount of targets at a tight end position. That's just not something you often get. And then at defenses, I think the Jags are going to be a pretty heavily owned team this week. They're just a very good defense, and I think it's fine against Cincinnati, who's not projected to put up any points and simply can't run the ball at all. The Rams against the Giants are in a good spot. I think you could see some people want to play the Eagles because they're going to play the Denver starting Brock Osweiler, and that probably is going to end up being correct. The Eagles defense has been very good this year, so those were where I kind of landed on defenses. We'll be back again tomorrow doing a full game-by-game breakdown for FanDuel and DraftKings, taking a look at every game and some of the other fantasy considerations and guys you can kind of take a look at this week. It's a very interesting week in the NFL as we have some players moving around and teams against some good defenses and bad defenses. So we'll take a look at all of that tomorrow. DFSR.com/NBA will get you a free 3-day trial to our projection system, and you're all set to go. Buddy, talk to you tomorrow when we look at every game.
So long.